Hi, everybody. This is Dean Hagler from the Office of Irrational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core of Los Angeles, high atop the Art Deco window that is the Eastern Columbia. This is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, and we're coming to you live from the pool deck as it is a gorgeous day.
I am Phil Lernis,
your co-host,
and we are indeed high atop the historic core of downtown Los Angeles. We've been here before, not since Christopher Jacobs from Entertainment Tonight
was
our guest on the show back in springtime. So it's lovely to spend a very unseasonably cool summer day.
You know what? Here. You think it's cool, but I think it's perfect.
It is perfect. I'm just saying that we really haven't had many summer days here in Los Angeles.
Well, I've been traveling a lot, so I am very appreciative of this fact. I love this temperature. It's like there's a bit of air conditioning coming from the sea, and yet it's sunny and gorgeous.
It's, again, when climate change scientists... As we've talked about before,
yep.
When they decided to label it global warming, they should have consulted a marketing department.
Right. They kind of missed the boat on that whole idea.
They missed the boat. Global warming is only a little part of what the whole climate shift itself is better. I like the phrase global weirding. That's been used in certain books. Global weirding.
But global weirding crosses climate issues. I find the whole planet is weirding.
Indeed. That's why it's actually perfect. It's just
exactly.
Part of the larger
context.
Yes. And so this weather, as enjoyable it is, and see, that's why I like global weirding, because some of us enjoy what's weird.
Right.
Right?
I
enjoy it in a David Lynch film. You do not. You enjoy it in unseasonably cool summer temperatures here
see?
In Los Angeles.
That's what, exactly. And we both win.
Well, this has been another exciting installment of your Chill Pack Hollywood. Oh, no.
No, it hasn't.
It hasn't even been an hour.
We haven't even started.
You,
2 minutes
where
in.
Have you not been?
Well, let's start there. Madagascar. We get to cross off Madagascar. I haven't been there.
So then we're playing a bizarre Jeopardy game. Places you have not been.
Yes.
What is Madagascar?
Canary
you know,
Islands.
Did I ever tell you that I...
You went to Madagascar?
No, I always had this... my hand to God, this is absolutely true. If I ever had a daughter, I kind of want to name her Madagascar.
Why would you do that?
I've got deep emotional problems.
Oh, she would be what?
Maddie. Is what we would call her. Maddie.
Yeah, Gassy?
I always had Madagascar.
Gassy?
For boys...
Gascar.
For boys,
she'd be Gascar.
I enjoy, of course, more traditional names.
Canary
like
Islands.
D'Artagnan.
D'Artagnan. I hope you never breed.
Why were you in Chicago?
Well, Chicago was a lovely time. I was on the Man Cow show. Man Cow, the top-rated Chicago DJ who's all into the conspiracies, had me on the show. We were talking about the truth is out there.
Did you plug this show?
Plug this show as well. And they are cutting it up and playing it all through the first week of August. Which ended. So I guess...
Last week, yeah.
Yeah, so...
If you want to pay for a membership Man Cow's website, you can go and listen
to the archive.
Yeah, unlike your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Right.
Where we archive the shows and you can... the show has always been free. It will always be free. Yeah, Man Cow Show, you need to pay a membership to get to listen to the stuff there in the archives on the
station. But in Chicago, he's live.
Well, he's on terrestrial radio.
Terrestrial radio. Yeah. But if you want to hear the old shows, you pay.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of them are highly entertaining.
Same could be said of ours.
Some of them.
Highly entertaining.
But Man Cow was great, and...
It must be said, we'll probably not be one of them.
Yeah, we're just warming up. We're bedazzled.
It's unseasonably cool.
Well, we're bedazzled by the view. We're looking at the pool over there, and it's just like, you know, it's a lot going on.
Before Man Cow, let's not say that you went to Chicago to do that interview.
No.
I mean, that was...
I was in Chicago, and I did that interview.
Because you were there, were you not, celebrating your birthday?
My birthday, that's right. I had the most awesome birthday in Chicago. The heat was sweltering. The humidity through the roof.
Yeah, you were actually posting and tweeting about not enjoying the heat.
I went through my entire wardrobe in a day. That's how much I sweat it. We jogged every morning to the Navy Pier and along the lakefront.
I don't know that song, Pier.
No, there's a pier that the Navy built.
Oh, I thought you were jogging to the beat
of the Navy Pier.
Yeah.
No, we actually... Yeah. No, no. We were jogging along the Navy Pier in the morning. We got our picture taken underneath Marilyn Monroe's skirt. And I think we covered it all, basically. Had some steak.
That's all the highlights.
Ate a deep dish pizza.
Chicago.
I think. Oh, went to Second City and saw a fabulous play at the Waterworks Theater. You know, the oldest, the only building to survive the fire. The Great Fire of 1871.
Oh, right, right.
They built a, it's the Waterworks thing. It's a stone building, and there's a theater in there, and saw an amazing play. And
what was the play?
The play was Litka, the Memories of Litka, I think it's called.
Huh.
Of Litka, and it was a spectacular play developed at their own workshop series, and I loved it. I thought it was really great. Magical. The theater apparently has lots of money because there was some great stage effects. The acting was spectacular. I can't recommend it highly enough.
I have a friend whose birthday is today.
Oh, happy birthday to that friend.
Kristen Louie. And she's celebrating in San Francisco. And I so want to get away to San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking about doing it this coming weekend.
Yeah.
I'm not.
What? Wait a second. But you tweeted that I ruined your vacation somehow.
Yeah.
By running an errand.
You did, by making me run an errand.
I had no idea you were on a vacation.
I know. That was why it was the perfect vacation this week. I vacationed 13 and a half miles from here. And
basically where the bus ended.
It's the perfect. It's really, I've decided it's the perfect vacation. If you can vacation close enough to where if you really need to take care of something, you can, where you can get in, get out, nobody gets hurt.
Right.
It's perfect. And it's easiest sometimes to hide in plain sight. Like, nobody could find me. Nobody knew where I was.
So
it was the best vacation. And at the same time, no pressure to do all the things you have to do when you're on vacation.
Right.
Like, we got to see this. Got to see that. Got to do that. Got to do that. Where you come back so exhausted.
Yeah.
And by the way, a 13.5 mile journey doesn't really tire me out.
I guess not. I guess
I don't get a sinus infection on a 13.5.
No, like we did on the plane.
Mile, yeah.
Yeah. The United Airlines somehow is filtering air that has the sinus infection powder in it.
And that's how they unite you.
And
you're all going to share the same breath.
Exactly.
So anyway, I will not be going to San Francisco this weekend, but you will be going to San Francisco very soon, won't you?
Yes.
Are there details on this
yet? I'm going to learn them tonight down in the art gallery downstairs.
So maybe next week we'll be able to post all the details.
This weekend, though.
Not a hint. We don't want to be teasing people. You will be having a gallery show of your artwork in San Francisco.
That's right. That'll be exciting.
We'll talk about that next week.
Yes. And then I was in Albuquerque.
You were in Albuquerque this weekend.
At the Sci-Fi Expo.
Again, other than Madagascar, where have you not been?
I know. Albuquerque, New Mexico, home of the green chili.
The Sci-Fi Expo, this is a science fiction convention.
Yes.
And you performed?
I performed.
Improv.
I performed the old X-Files improv. They wanted that one. I dusted it off. I hadn't performed it in 3 years, I realized.
That's not true.
When else did I do it?
Well, you did the second X-Files movie. At both XCon and at DragonCon 2 years ago.
Oh, 2 years ago. Okay, yeah.
So or not the second X-Files movie. It was X-Files 1.5.
That's
the movie
right.
In between the two movies that
should have
been there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. That was hilarious. But this one was good. Kind of a small crowd. It turns out that there's two comic book stores, and I use stores in the correct term here, because what happens is they hate each other. In a small town of Albuquerque, these two comic book shops hate each other. So they put on these elaborate conventions at the same convention center, like a month apart, to try drive the other guy under. So each one of these, so not a month ago, they had a giant Comic-Con where Burt LeVar,
LeVar Burton.
LeVar Burton was there. Yeah, Burt LeVar. Listen to me.
Burt LeVar is a great... That's my agent. Burt LeVar.
Yeah, LeVar Burton was there. I mean, other big names. This, and then Walter Koenig was here with Dean Stockwell. I mean, you know, so they're going out of their way to compete, and it's sort of... the rule of diminishing returns, because the crowds are getting smaller and smaller at each one of these things. And I hope, for the sake of Albuquerque, that these two comic book stores really, really sort of find peace somehow. Maybe they could actually read some of their comics together in a group reading that would bring them together. I don't know.
That would help heal the global weirding.
The global weirding of two comic book stores fighting.
Stores. They do not get to be stores until they stop their ceaseless bickering.
That's exactly it. Make the silliness stop.
I've actually started to enjoy this episode.
With the stores.
I, in your absence, because the universe abhors a vacuum.
Oh, doesn't it?
And
that's why I never clean.
One of the things you do, in addition, you know, you paint.
I do.
You're a painter. You're an improv comic.
I do.
An inventor. You're a podcast.
I just found out I'm an award-winning playwright.
What?
Yes. Back in theater sports days in Vancouver, I created a play called Free Willy Shakespeare, which was a partially scripted, partially improvised Shakespearean play.
That's funny.
And we won a Jesse Award, the Vancouver's Theater Award.
Very prestigious.
Nobody ever told me about it till I was at Comic-Con and saw one of my old theater sports friends, Ian Boothby, who then said, yeah, you know, we won a Jesse for that thing you and I put together.
Who got to say, who got to stand up there, hold up the Jesse, unfurl the Jesse? I don't know what the Jesse, but hold it proudly and say Dean Haglund could not be here to accept this award?
That was never mentioned, actually. It was our executive director, Jay Ono, who said on behalf of all theater sports, because it was partially improvised and partially scripted, though I recall writing most of that structure. But whatever. I'm not bitter. I'm happy now to say I'm an award-winning playwright.
So you have all these activities, all these endeavors. What some people may not be aware, unless they listen to every single minute of your Chilpak Hollywood Hour,
could happen.
And who could blame you? Really.
It's the thing I do.
You host tours.
Yes.
Or conduct tours.
Conduct tours.
Here in downtown Los Angeles.
Yes.
The LA Confidential Tours. Is there a web page?
There is a web page. It's down at the moment, so I'm going to build it this week. Well, now that this show's, we've mentioned it.
You, of course, were on the road, Chicago, then Albuquerque.
Yes.
And we had one of our loyal listeners.
Loyal listeners come down from Canada.
The Sicilian,
mm-hmm.
Antonella, made her first Chapley, as we also love to call her.
Right.
She made her first ever trip to this city of angels.
Fantastic.
And Dean Haglund was unavailable.
I'm so sorry.
For an LA Confidential tour.
Damn it.
So I stepped in, only 13 and a half miles away, by the way, on vacation. Took the Gold Line in.
Fantastic.
And met Antonella and her roommate, Antonella. See, this is already shaping up to be the easiest tour that ever possible, and you miss it. Anyway, and I gave the two of them a tour of
as best you remember
as
from mine.
Not from yours, but just what I knew and things that you'd told me.
Right.
I mean, you know, a little Harold Lloyd, some Charles Chaplin, some
Mary
Bradbury building,
little
some
Bradbury.
Angels Flight,
the
Union Station.
Oh, you went down to Union Station?
The Chinatown
walk there?
Not only the Chinatown walk, but the last remaining part of the border that actually exists, letting you know you're in Chinatown.
Do
so
you go
kiss
through?
Your ass goodbye. I don't know. I got nothing. But so I was a little bit like Dean Haglund.
Look at you.
Yeah, and I think...
Did you get a tip at the end?
No, I didn't. They bought me a sandwich at Philippe's. That was lovely.
There you go.
And, you know, it's just kind of doing my part, holding up my end, as they used to say in the war, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And as an Angeleno, you're proud of your downtown, are you not?
I actually, walking around, it was the sort of night that makes you fall in love with this city.
Right.
It could not... Interestingly enough, earlier that day, 13 and a half miles away from here, as I was, I got up, not early.
Not early.
It was probably 11 a.m.
Okay.
And I looked out the window, and I dialed up the Weather Channel on my BlackBerry.
As one does.
To look for the weather report there and right here in Los Angeles. It said... 90 degrees, 0% chance of rain, which, looking out the window, of course, meant 70 degrees, pouring showers. 0% chance of rain.
And it was raining.
And it was
pouring.
Really coming down. But it was one of those things where
those
summer showers, we haven't had many of those this summer. And it pushed through, and then the air, beautiful, and then the color of the sunset.
Yes. It scrubs away the smog and the marine layer. And then it was
fantastic.
You know that in fact that very first picture that Herb Ritz ever took of Richard Gere that made them both famous. His headshot. It's renowned in the photography world. It happened just after a rainstorm like that. They were sitting at a party, and he said, "Yeah, come on outside after this rain." And the air was fresh, and then Richard Gere's eyes and the black and white and everything. And it was like all of that lighting and the sun bouncing off the wet made him
terrific.
Yes, and he got so much work off that headshot, and Herb Ritz became this celebrity photographer. Isn't that a great story?
It is because of a
Los Angeles rain.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, we will be, you and I...
Yes.
...in Hotlanta.
Oh, yeah!
Your eighth attending Dragon Con.
That's right. Going to be exciting.
My second. You will be doing the full range. I mean, you're going to be on a panel on Friday.
Two of them.
About X-Files.
Oh, yes.
You're going to be doing your improv comedy.
Yes, a new one.
You're hosting some show. A Buffy improv one. With a cast member from Buffy.
Claire, yes, that's right.
Slayer. And of course, on Sunday...
Sunday. Live.
I think 5 p.m. there.
Yes.
At Dragon Con. Anyway, the truth is out there.
Screening.
Is going to be screening. And then you and I are doing a Q&A
look at that.
Afterwards.
We just give and give and give at that con.
And then when we're done, we give some more.
Yes, that's what my T-shirt's going to say. That's right.
Oh, my goodness. Pliskin, right now, listening to this, is already creating a new Chill Back Hollywood Hour, Give Till It Hurts.
That's right. And we'll get two T-shirts that we'll wear at the con proudly. Pliskin's name could be on the back. Go for it.
Awesome. So that'll be a lot of fun. You know... One of the things about this screening, and I was thinking about this in terms of meeting Chapley this week, meeting the fans. It's always so much fun to
connect,
to meet. You know, and it was, as you know, when we first started working together, there was a certain bit of interacting with the public that made me scared.
Remember that?
Nervous.
You were frightened back then.
Groups, I was not.
Big on groups?
And the thing is, you're not big on groups except in certain circumstances.
Where I can control the show.
When you're on stage. But you also, like, you know, when people come up to you and engage with you. But there is a certain order to it. Like, people tend to wait in line and people tend to, you know...
Be polite.
And as opposed to being in a crowd that's trying to get into a stadium or get onto a train or...
Burn down buildings in Tottenham or something like that.
Oh, yes. Because the Lakers won.
Exactly.
In Tottenham.
I'm not sure why that started.
Weird reference. But since LA is the center of the universe...
Right. Everything's about the Lakers winning and then a riot happening.
It was fun getting to meet Chapley, and it's always so much fun. Like when we were at the U.S. premiere of The Truth Is Out There in San Jose, getting to meet Anthony Soto and Annabelle Iglesias, two of our listeners who live very near where my parents live. They made a long drive to come and see the film.
Right.
And I remember what was so interesting, and this is why I bring it up. When I found out that they were coming, I wrote to them, make sure that you come up and introduce yourself.
Yeah.
You know, they're loyal listeners to the show, and they'll send comments, and they're very encouraging. And I said, make sure you come up and introduce yourself. And I got back responses from them prior to the screening. Okay, we will. We promise. But, you know, we're very shy. And it was very sweet. They were very shy.
They were delightfully shy.
You know, I had this experience in Washington, D.C., where I was so excited that another one of our, just a listener that I adore from the comments that she posts, and she's so interesting, Nicole Hockenberry.
Oh, yeah.
She attended The Truth Is Out There in Washington, D.C. I didn't get to meet her. Didn't come up and introduce herself. And Nicole, if you're listening, I'm not saying this to make you feel bad. I'm just letting you know that it made me feel bad.
Right. You were disappointed. Yeah, so don't feel bad.
I'm just guilting you.
Right.
And shaming you.
Right. Yeah, but you know what? You do that to me all the time, and it has no effect.
I think it's made you a better person.
No, really?
Yeah.
No, I became a better person on my own. Your shaming and guilting had nothing to do with it.
It didn't hurt. Clearly.
Maybe it did hurt. Maybe it hurt something and you don't know. Think about that.
Anyway, so, you know, I think that some people are shy and are nervous. And
you're a big presence. Don't kid yourself. You know, you come across like a overlord bearing down on the populace.
I seem very serious.
Yes.
Yeah, I very serious. But the thing is,
did not that lawyer call the police on you and take a picture?
Right. But but he is not a regular listener.
He is now.
Of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Right? I bet he is now.
I mean, let's face it. I'm your friend in podcasting.
You are. Right.
I'm the crazy uncle. Crazy Uncle Phil. So I just bring this up because I certainly hope that people feel comfortable coming up and saying hi and introducing, because it's one of the things, speaking just for me.
Just for you.
And speaking for Dean.
Sure. Just for me, too.
No, but it is one of the fun things for me, getting to meet people who listen to the show, especially people who listen to the show.
Yes.
I mean, I'm all for meeting people and talking to people who've just seen the movie, absolutely. Yeah. But especially people who've been part of this journey.
And at Albuquerque, there was fans coming up of our show as well that were there.
And it really is fun. So I love it. It's not about guilting or shaming. It is merely just to
make sure that's an open invitation.
People have an open invitation because
all the time.
It's fun. It always is fun getting to meet the people who listen.
In fact, hang around 13 miles away from Phil's place at any given time, and you can see him on vacation.
You can find the photos of the place courtesy of people who've listened to the show and not been particularly fond of me.
Who are those people? I don't know. That's just me.
They all seem to have kind of gone away, though, is the thing. The anger and the meanness and the hostility has kind of gone away.
Because you deflated so well.
Well, I think also having actually,
adjusted.
A lot of people were fearful, I think, about what kind of movie we were making with The Truth Is Out There, at a time when we didn't even know what movie we were making because we were shooting it.
Right.
It was revealing itself to us. But so many people had such emotional attachment to things, and also people are so used to not being listened to.
Yes, or made fun of.
Yeah.
Particularly when you hear there's a comedian dealing with conspiracies.
So a lot of people wanted to project onto it what it was before they saw it, and now I think word has kind of got out that, hey, this is a pretty lovely, touching film. So.
Absolutely. In fact, here's a production note. We'll be on Coast to Coast Radio. Rob Simone will be having me and perhaps you on August 14th in the evening, Coast to Coast, promoting The Truth Is Out There. Won't that be exciting?
You won't be in Vegas? You'll be back?
I'll be back. I'll be back the day before.
I'll be gone.
What?
Yeah, I'm gone this weekend. I am. I am going away.
Okay, I will be on Coast to Coast Radio.
I should be on, though.
Well, it's going to be phoned in. We can phone it in.
Oh, you... Believe me.
I have phoned them
with
all
you.
In. They're all phoned.
Everybody in. Fill in the punchline.
Zing, zing. I've been schooled.
Well, that'd be fun.
Yes.
That'd be fun.
We'll work that out. Not on this show.
You know what is stunning to me? You know, we're in the middle of the summer season, which is all about movies, big summer movies.
Big summer movies.
But what I was sitting and thinking about this last week, how much, you know, we used to rant about why isn't the film business year-round, in the sense, why aren't big titles released year-round? Why aren't these things spread out? Why isn't there counter-programming all the time? And now there really is.
They listen to our show. Clearly the marketing departments of all the studios. We have influenced all of Hollywood.
The major studios. We are shadowy reflections upon the major studios. It would take but a nudge to make them think exactly like us. And your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour is that nudge.
That's the nudge we're looking for.
So what I was kind of amazed by, though, was how much television is on for someone like me to watch right now. I mean, first run television, and here we are in summer, and this was always, you know, growing up, this was the doldrums.
I know. Remember, it was, I think, Survivor that would first broke the rule with the new show in July. That was like, oh, what are you doing? You're crazy? Nobody stays home in the summer to watch TV. But now, you're right, Breaking Bad, the new season coming
up. Well, Breaking Bad, this is exactly, I watched the fourth episode of season four last night.
Yeah.
A true return to form.
Okay, great.
I had been very worried after the first episode especially, and then slowly they'd been starting to kind of piece it back together. That episodes two and three really felt like transition, though.
Yeah.
So it really felt like, okay, they're gonna hit their stride again now, or uh-oh. And it was vintage.
It was
vintage Breaking Bad.
Fantastic.
And thank God. I don't know what the ratings will be like. You know, the season premiere was an astonishingly high viewership total. The second most viewers ever for an AMC, episode or season premiere beyond after Walking Dead. It beat all of Mad Men's season premiere audiences. So And, of course, Breaking Bad, the DVD sales from one season to the next keep
growing exponentially.
Wow. It's really
kind
of counter to what every sort of demographic
marketing plan
for any show is.
And, that's awesome. I love
so
that story.
It's vintage Breaking Bad last night, and also very much in the news because AMC's going through rather tense and troubling negotiations to keep the show next season because the contracts are all up with Sony. And I guess still traditionally, even though the television industry has changed so much, season five is the season where the production company is expected to start paying the freight for the episode costs after the networks. So
I didn't realize that.
It's really a tough negotiation going on. But what I gather is Vince Gilligan intends season five to be the final season. He is going to wrap this all up.
Yeah.
This is not going to be something that we're going to see how long we can continue.
Because that corkscrew is so tight now. I mean, how can it possibly?
And he envisions a 20-episode season five.
Fantastic.
AMC wants a 6-episode season five. They only want 6 episodes because the costs are so much, I guess. So what probably it seems to me is going to end up happening is they'll shoot 20, something like that, and then they'll spread them out over two seasons,
which or at
is
least
fine,
that's fine.
But at least if you let the storytellers creatively wrap things up, how and you know with Vince and the way that they make this show, it's going to be authentic.
Yeah,
how they wrap this up.
But here's what I don't understand.
I
about
feel
cable.
Like they introduced last night the wrap up.
Oh, okay. Don't tell anymore. Enough with the spoiler alerts, pal. Here's what I don't understand though. We're in cable. They start in July. These seasons now are just arbitrary.
This
came from the network's days when they said, well, we want a new show in September because the car companies would introduce a new car in September. So they wanted to have something to coincide with that.
Thank God, though, because if you had the television awards, like the Emmys, all coming after the new year, just like
the Oscars
the movies,
and everything.
Oh, God. Exactly what we need is one more, you know.
Yeah, that's true. That would be a nutty awards.
Although the Golden Globe does both TV and film.
But nobody pays attention to that.
Exactly.
My point, though,
Breaking Bad, again, the arbitrariness of all this stuff, though. Breaking Bad, we're in season four. It's not eligible for the Emmys this year because ordinarily Breaking Bad was debuting a couple months earlier and beating the deadline.
See, so that's even stupid. I mean, there's got to be this wash away of scheduling and how long a season lasts, like this whole idea. So if Vince can visualize 20 episodes to wrap this up, then how about six years of 5 episodes or you know, we do it in 5 chunks or split it up however, a 10 and a 10, or it doesn't matter. It's if the artist can go, I can name this tune in 25 episodes, then it behooves the network to go, fantastic. We'll not try to jam 26 in. We're not jamming 20 in. Like, we're not trying to chase the networks. We are our own entity, like BBC does.
Right.
Their seasons are 6 episodes, maybe. Maybe they do 10. Sometimes they're just a 4-arc miniseries. These things are all spectacular. They win awards. They get, everybody gets work from them. And the BBC doesn't go, oh, we're not competing with the networks. Damn it. You know, there's none of that going on.
And the costs don't have to be enormous. Again, the actors and the crews and the directors and the showrunners and all these people, that isn't the only thing they get to do.
That's right. They can be released from that contract.
So if interesting,
and
they want to do it, I mean, again, you had Helen Mirren doing television even after she was becoming one of the biggest box office draws, you know.
Yeah.
And it's why? Because it's an interesting part.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a chance for the actor to work. And so your quality increases. You get away from these rigid old-school ideas of timing and scheduling.
Well,
your costs in contracting.
Bringing up the BBC, and of course it's so interesting now that we're seeing more and more crossover. We always used to see imports, television shows remade for American television.
Right.
And to a degree, the other way.
Right.
But, of course, American shows, like American movies, tended to export.
True.
And there was much more protectionism here. largely because it was hard to fit them into a schedule other than on PBS.
Right, right, right.
Before the days of cable. Torchwood now gets imported here to America with an American production. I mean, it's both joint British and American,
but it's
an all-new production spun off from Torchwood with the name Torchwood.
And the lead actor.
And lead actors.
And the, yeah.
And I've asked you about this a few weeks ago. I'm about to start watching the original Torchwood series from BBC. Have you been watching this new Torchwood yet?
No. For some reason, my TiVo did not record it. I don't know if I typed it in wrong or what happened, but I'm all excited to watch this whole new thing.
What network is it on?
I thought it was TNT, one of those.
Okay.
Well, I see, that's the thing. I just typed in Torchwood on my TiVo without even looking at what network it is. And then I must have typed in the old BBC one because it's looking for all of those old reruns, which I only put first run because I watched it in the first run. So.
Well, and here we are. Again, now it's summer. We're talking about Breaking Bad being on. We're talking about Torchwood being on. So many people excited about that. I read yesterday that episode 3 of the new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, so again, Curb Your Enthusiasm, a summer debut, episode 3 was the most watched episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm ever.
So last week was episode 3.
Yeah.
So the middle of July, or the end of July.
And,
middle
of summer. Not a season premiere.
Yeah.
Middle of July, at a time when, again, don't put new television on, because everyone's on vacation, who's going to watch new television? Most watched episode ever, including 2 years ago, the Seinfeld run.
Wow.
And how much press and publicity did that get?
That huge.
I was aware that the new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm was coming, but I wasn't being beaten over the head with it.
Yeah. And how was this the most watched? Was it just nothing else on? Or?
Well, and I just think that there's a certain... we're in this kind of exciting time now where, again, marketing is all word of mouth.
Yeah.
Or
tweets
or
whatever.
Fingers with tweets and messages. And that's why the direct marketing step has to be, you know, you need to tell someone, someone else needs to tell someone. That's the only thing that leads to the action steps. And it's impossible to measure.
Right.
It really is impossible to measure. When the thing is on, how many people watched it?
There was an interesting thing in an indie filmmaker's website, that the whole term now is not indie film marketing, but D to F, direct to fans.
Exactly.
That your marketing is direct to fans. You build that fan base, and then you shoot to them, and then those fans will ripple out that word if it's awesome, and if they hate it, then they'll also let you know. So you have a perfect... balancing gauge on the quality.
It's like in you know, movies, when they have opening weekends, one of the most interesting things, you know, we're all about the numbers, we're all about how big it opened and what the awareness factor was going in, and then the exit scores, like, oh, audiences gave it an A. But what really tells you about how much an audience liked it is how it performs the second day compared to the first day.
Right.
Now, some movies are automatically going to drop the second day if they had the biggest opening day in history, if there was that built up like a Harry Potter appetite for it. But most movies that don't have that kind of, oh, we've got to see it first day, got to see it first day, if it goes up the second day over the first day, regardless of how small the first day was or how disappointing it was or whatever, if it went up the second day, it means the people that saw it actually liked it because they told other people.
And those people,
went and saw it.
So yeah, I think, and I'm thinking of that movie Bellflower. This movie is getting... Do you know this movie?
Yes.
Yes.
People have been telling me about this.
Yes, and they two guys, and they are really into... they make their own flamethrower, and that the filmmaker himself made his own camera. He built his own movie camera to film this thing, and it gives the whole film a really unique look. And it's a romance action thing that's supposed to be spectacular. And there's a movie that the word of mouth is building so incredibly fast that I am now going to go and search this thing out regardless of where it's screening. I'm hoping it's screening in some back alley in some somebody's house, that I'm going to go knock on the door and watch it there.
I have been seeing lots of movies, even as I've been watching more television than usual, because, of course...
You're on vacation.
Well, my Project Runway is back on.
Oh, your mentor.
Tim Gunn.
He's thoughtful. He's...
You notice I've been wearing to some of our premieres a Thank You Mood T-shirt. Suit and a Thank You Mood T-shirt.
A Thank You Mood.
Which is, you know, what his catchphrase, because they always go shopping on most challenges for fabrics at Mood, the fabric store, and at the end of the shopping session, he always turns and says, "Thank you, Mood." And so I have a thank you Mood.
Is Mood a Los Angeles store?
It's in Los Angeles. You're as kidding. Well. It's a New Mood, York and LA.
Mood yeah. fabric store.
Yeah.
And you went and got a shirt made.
No, it's one of the greatest gifts. Anyway, no, they have them.
Oh,
now.
I see.
And oh, wow. It was given to me as a gift. So there's a love that Project Runway is back on. It's just so, you know, it's fun and it's entertaining and it's also just so inspiring seeing you get to learn about these people, and some of them come from very desperate straits. Some of them are cancer survivors. There's as many different stories as there are many different people endeavoring to embark on a creative career, and the way that some of them take all the challenges that they've been confronted by in their life and use it as the fuel for their creativity and have these incredible outlooks is so inspiring. And then getting to see what we, you know, again, see too little of, I think, in contemporary society, what with the global weirding and all, genuine mentoring going
right.
on.
See, now I still have trouble with reality series. So it's, you know, I'm sort of still just holding up.
Which is why you're not watching the final season of Entourage.
I know, too close to home, that show. Huh? Look at we are pool top
here.
So
I have been with Entourage since the very beginning.
Yes.
Even when, last season was unwatchable. It is just this
thing. The porn
thing
star has girlfriend?
Has been holding on so past its shelf life.
Yeah, not even its fingernails anymore.
I mean, it's just really, the mold last from its couple shirt. Seasons, pretty rough. Last season, just one of the worst shows on television, and yet I still watch it because you know that the next season's going to be the finale. They keep talking about a big screen movie version of it, but I think that's just so that people will feel like they have to watch the season.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
And it is, if not a return to form, it certainly is much improved over last.
Because year. They all sat down and gave themselves a stiff talking to, or what happened?
I don't know. I guess they
fired some dead weight.
So it is much more interesting.
Yeah.
The directions they've gone in. It's just, you know, there's still the sense that, boy, it
self-indulgent. I
and
can't.
It, especially when you keep something on so long after it outlives its usefulness.
It seems like everybody that was involved with it in the beginning has left the show to its own devices and left the actors swinging in the wind. Really.
Meanwhile, you know, you can scratch your heads going, why are they even bothering to continue 2.5 Men without Charlie Sheen? Well, they're doing it because it's a cash cow.
Cash cow.
If you can keep it alive,
right.
That's why you offer
brand
Hugh
marketing.
Grant $100 million to step in.
And he
turns it down
and
once he meets
home.
the showrunner.
Yeah,
I don't need $100 million. There's no there's amounts no, of $100 million worth.
That's not enough zeros.
Oh, I'm sorry. I understood that we were talking pounds, not dollars. Is that like how his exit line?
Yeah, totally.
But I was fascinated by how strong the reaction was, positive the reaction was, to this season's premiere.
Oh, no,
which
premiered?
Just shot. No, it just shot last week. And apparently, from those who've seen it and
who
were
in
it.
Was in the live studio audience?
That, in the audience and in the show. It really is a return to form for the writing. Now, I never liked this show. I never watched this show.
I did watch this show.
And apparently people say that it used to have really good writing.
Yes.
And apparently this season the writing is excellent. And one of the reasons is that they really get to focus on the supporting character.
Ah, see?
It gives them the opportunity to do that.
A little more Ryan Stiles in there.
A little more ensemble.
Right.
Because
that's what they would have to do, of course, to support.
So wouldn't Ashton that be interesting if this thing really makes it?
I would be fascinated. It would be television history first, I would think. Where else can you think of an actor coming in the middle of a huge run?
Well, yeah, who's the lead?
Yeah,
who's the lead? I mean,
other
you can
than
talk
Robert
about
Patrick.
You can talk about Bewitched.
Yeah,
you know, you can talk about Lionel on the Jeffersons,
perhaps.
You know, one of the daughters on Roseanne. But these are
X-Files,
all very much supporting players.
Yeah. So,
so I don't know.
I don't know. This would be interesting. I'm now going to watch it because of that comment you just made there. Look at you.
Now, in the realm of movies,
yes, which we do exist. Okay, you can see Hollywood right over there.
This was a fascinating weekend at the box office.
Right.
Overperforming beyond all expectations, the rise of the Planet of the Apes.
That shocks me to no end. Because you know what? I just saw that movie, and it was called The Trailer. the trailer showed the whole movie.
I think so. And yet...
Come on.
I can't go anywhere in this town.
I know you
can't. I was at a reading of a musical version of Medea yesterday. I kid you not. A reading and a singing of it.
I was singing, yeah.
So kind of highbrow stuff, right?
Right.
All the performers and everything in it, between all they could talk about was how great Rise of the Planet of the Apes is.
What?
Time Magazine's headline, hard to beat for the best film of 2011. Best film.
What?
What you don't get from the trailers, I guess, is that it's all told from the point of view of...
A monkey.
Of a monkey, of an ape. It's all told from their point of view.
Yeah.
There's much without humans. It's a silent film, much of it, in that sense.
Right.
And, of course, it's winning so many awards from PETA and animal groups because, of course, it's the first time...
You see it from the animal's point of view.
Well, no, no animals were used.
Oh, right. That's Andy. That's the guy who was Gollum.
It's all captured.
Yeah, it's the guy
it's
who played...
Circus.
Yeah, played Gollum and King Kong, and now he's the ape.
So I guess I have to see this because the reviews are extraordinary.
I'm flabbergasted. I am without speech now.
Much like Andy Serkis in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Meanwhile, the raunchy R-rated comedy's success string throughout this summer of 2011 has clearly come to an end. It was
crashing
on its last legs with Friends with Benefits, which underperformed. The Change-Up with Ryan Reynolds and Jason Bateman is a true flop.
You would think it'd be...
From the writers of The Hangover, from the director of Wedding Crashers, starring Jason Bateman, who's in one of the big sleeper hits of the summer, just crossed $100 million, Horrible Bosses.
Horrible Bosses.
Ryan Reynolds, who's supposed to be a big movie star.
Green Lantern.
Well, yeah, exactly. Now you're talking about why it wasn't...
Oh.
I mean, this is clearly the summer that proved that Ryan Reynolds isn't... A movie star.
That's where he licks his wounds.
When you have a superhero movie and a comedy that's supposed to be in his wheelhouse, both underperform dramatically.
Damn it!
He's going to take the flak for it. I don't understand why you release the Change Up when Jason Bateman is still in the top six or seven in the box office with another comedy.
Well, I know why. Because you plan this out a year in advance. You pick your weekend. And then you go, well, he's in this other movie. But clearly, I can't imagine Horrible Bosses doing more than 2 weeks after you hear its premise.
And
stuff.
Can take advantage of him being on those shows to piggyback.
Right. We piggyback on the marketing, and clearly we will score big, not realizing the whiplash effect of if that thing's a hit and yours underperforms, you are dead in the water.
But it just does not seem... Now, I have no trouble believing, actually, that group of talent came up with something that probably has a lot of laughs in it. I've heard that the test scores from audiences were really good, that people find it funny. The problem is that premise won't hunt. That dog will not hunt, and therefore it is unsurprising that this failed, because you have to market the premise in this day and
age. It's got to sell off the page, off the log line.
Horrible Bosses, the trailers actually made you wonder, is the film ever funny? But the premise worked.
Right.
The premise resonated with people. So they took the chance that, I don't really see a lot of jokes in here.
But I hate my boss enough that I want to kill him, and so...
The Change Up, the body-switching premise...
Yeah.
That's so lame...
Tired.
...that the only reason to make it worthwhile is if it turns out to be the funniest movie ever made.
Right.
But I'm not going to run the risk.
Yeah, I'll wait for DVD on that one.
So not surprising. Much like, everybody's talking about the surprising success of the Smurfs, right? I mean, this is a huge hit.
Yeah, but
and
it's not
you,
that.
But it's not surprising.
I don't think it's that surprising.
Yeah, and why not?
Well, because there's nothing else filling that niche right now. I mean,
and what is that niche?
Well, that is the family movie that also has a retro feel to it. And it's got the same thing the Elvin and the Chipmunks did, your computer generated.
Exactly.
It's got enough that you go, well, and I still say this is people how people go to movies. They just go to the movie theater, then look up and down the 14 screens and go...
Well, I don't think that's true with this, because every young person that I know, and as you know, I do know quite a few young people, they were all so eagerly anticipating the Smurfs.
Really?
More so than Harry Potter.
Yeah. Why?
I mean,
okay,
this thing... was like driving out of getting their parents to drive them out of the way weeks in advance to get Smurfs bracelets from Blockbuster. News, Apparently Blockbuster's still around. So anyway, I'm with you. I didn't think it was that surprising.
Right.
Though. I really, because
but I'm surprised that the kids were so excited about it. Because I thought the Smurfs had been off the air since the 90s.
But I get the feeling that the Smurfs plays well on internet.
Oh.
YouTube videos and things like that to keep it alive.
Right.
I think the humor of it probably works still exists. In that.
Is there a lot of Smurf mashups I love when they do My Little Pony and rap music.
Well, mashup is the word really again for unsurprising failures. This has been a summer of some huge hits. It's also, as always, every summer there's some real box office failures. The Zookeeper, of course.
Yes.
The Green Lantern.
Green Lantern.
Mr. Popper.
Ouch.
All of them should move aside though, because clearly the colossal flame out bomb of the year
2011,
Ishtar, ladies and gentlemen, is Cowboys and Aliens.
Ouch.
And this is not surprising that this is such a huge failure. I mean,
well, here's the inverse.
This?
No,
it is not bad. I will say this in reviewing the movie for what it is.
Yeah,
it is not bad. And it's charmingly old-fashioned in terms of the action is shot. It's all this. There is nothing special about it. And here's a film that cost $200 million. Probably would have been much better if it cost $2 million.
Right.
Because then you would have had to really play with that premise.
Right.
In an inventive way and create tension. But once you say, hey, here's the premise, here's the mashup, everyone loves aliens, everyone loves cowboys, we'll get Daniel Craig, we'll get Harrison Ford, we'll get Jon Favreau, we've got Spielberg, Brian Grazer, Ron Howard, the writers of the Transformer movies and Star Trek. Easily, that alone is $80 to $100 million in fees.
Right.
Right there.
Paying for Bloodline.
To warrant paying $100 million in those fees, you now have to make a $200 million film so that it can be big enough.
Right.
So everything was about making it bigger. And consequently, there's nothing fun.
Right. It's overblown.
Within the Western, nothing fun within the sci-fi. It's not for people who love Westerns. It's not for people who love sci-fi. It's almost to not disgust people who hate Westerns or sci-fi. Like, many of the people in the sold-out or the filled screening that I was at the DGA talked about how, well, I don't like Westerns and I don't like sci-fi. And then they walked out going, well, this was fantastic. I would gladly have paid $15 for this.
This was
right,
a breath of fresh air.
But you didn't have to pay $15
right.
for it.
Yeah, right. But it was a breath of fresh air for those who hate those genres.
Yeah.
Right. But if I love those genres, and that's the thing. Here's the inverse to selling off the premise, that you have to sell off the log line. But if your whole joke is the long line and you screw up on delivering what that log line at least sort of promises, then you're also in trouble, as Cowboys and Aliens proves, right? So here you have, two flops back-to-back, which prove a very nuanced point about your marketing, your logline, your premise, and your title itself being the funniest thing in the whole movie. I mean,
yeah,
really.
Well, that's all they can market on.
Yeah.
That's seemingly all they can market on.
All right.
So.
And this is sort of like comic books does, and I think that Cowboys and Aliens started as a comic book, is that you write a hilarious comic book title, and then you fill out what that comic would be. Man-Eating Cow is a good example, who did later Man-Eating Cow blossomed into Mutant Teenage Ninja Turtles.
Oh.
And that was a funny title. This guy, Kevin came up with funny titles and then drew comics around that. So, you know, Too Much Coffee Man is another example, and Cowboys and Aliens is another example.
Did you see the Captain America movie yet? Captain America the First Avenger?
I have not.
I love that I've become Dean Hagland. I saw Thor in 3D. I saw Cowboys and Aliens. I saw Captain America the First Avenger.
Look at you go.
I'm giving tours in downtown Los Angeles.
And I'm a recluse that no one sees traveling around the world.
So, you're actually wearing suits.
I'm wearing
these
suits
days too.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's just terrifying.
I'm completely incognito.
So, I saw the Captain America.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing, though: the unfairness of all this. It's about expectation, and it's about expectation based on marketing. I think people had very low expectations. Critics, I mean, about Captain America: The First Avenger. So, consequently, when it comes out, it gets pretty good reviews.
Right.
I think Cowboys and Aliens had such baggage because of
Daniel Craig and Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford, Jon Favreau, Brian Grazer, Big Ron names. Howard, Steven Spielberg, and this sense that, okay, this mashup is risky, but it's so weird, it might just work.
Right.
If they go balls out for it. And they don't go balls out.
Because it's $200 million.
So critics feel underwhelmed.
Yeah.
And so, for the most part, the reviews have been bad.
Right.
I don't think Cowboys and Aliens is less satisfying than Captain America. In fact, I think it's more satisfying than Captain America.
Wow.
I think there are things in Captain America that are better. I think the first half of Captain America, which really focuses on period detail, they do such a wonderful job of creating in a pleasing way the world of 1942. And it's beautiful and it's fun to look at, and the characters are rich, and it's just pleasing in that way. And then it becomes a comic book action movie.
Right.
And like Graham Elwood and Chris Mancini were saying when we guested on Comedy Film Nerds, there's no real villain. And it's true. Hugo Weaving, I didn't understand what they meant when they said Hugo Weaving makes a great villain. Red Skull doesn't work. And I was thinking, but Hugo Weaving plays Red Skull. I don't understand. They nailed it exactly. Hugo Weaving in Captain America, the First Avenger, makes a great villain. Red Skull does not.
Even though that was the villain in the comic book.
And in the movie, but you'd have to see it to understand what I mean.
Okay.
But in the first half of the film, there's a nice villain, and then there isn't.
Awesome. Okay.
It sets up, it almost feels like they did that, and then they set up the Avengers movie, because the question is, how does Captain America, who exists in the 1940s, how is he part of the new Avengers team?
Right, Iron Man and Thor.
They set that all up very nice. Those are the things that work. But overall, I just felt like, you know, I kind of got raped. Being forced to see this because I want to see Avengers.
Right.
So I want to know all the backstories.
Right.
I didn't feel that way with Thor, as you know. I felt that was a film that got better as it went along.
Yeah.
And so it left you feeling good at the end, even though it was shaky at the beginning. This is exactly the opposite. It's a two-act structure with an epilogue. The epilogue's cool. The first act is cool. The second act is horrible. But, as always, if you're going to see this movie, like any of the Marvel movies, stay through the end credits, stay to the very end, because there is an Easter egg, and this is the best Easter egg of all of them.
Okay. Awesome.
We have a few minutes left.
We do.
And we've been promising to do this. It has been
years.
A remarkable summer of movies here. It's been a remarkable year, actually, already. Some years we're dying to get to September or October so that some good movies come out, because we start to realize we're going to have to compile a top 10 list.
Oh, right. I got to get on that.
And this year, this summer, there have been films that are not in among the top box office performers, and yet really for me helped make this summer, in addition to some of the box office successes like Harry Potter, make this a really memorable movie summer.
Huh. How about that?
So I thought I would just list these people could maybe look for these. One is Cave of Forgotten Dreams. This opened on April 29th.
Yes.
It's Werner Herzog's documentary.
In 3D.
About the Chauvet Caves. And really, it's a beautiful documentary whether you see it in 2D or 3D, but as one reviewer wrote, it's the first time 3D has ever been used for good rather than evil. It adds, for lack of a better word, the 3D adds a spiritual component to these caves, to what you get to see. It really gives you an experience of traveling into them,
descending,
and so it's really quite something.
Can't wait.
Something that opened on May 13th, not available in theaters anywhere here anymore, but probably coming out on DVD soon and maybe in other parts of the world, based on a Raymond Carver short story. It's Everything Must Go.
Oh, yeah.
And it starred Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
And written and directed by first-timer Dan Rush.
Right.
And it's not a home run, but it is a really accomplished little quiet, meaningful film.
And that's where he's sitting in his front yard in the yard sale and that
selling off all his life. Everything must go.
Right.
Because he refuses to leave his house.
Right, right.
It resonates.
Okay.
I enjoyed, as I've said before, Midnight in Paris. Woody Allen, if ever a director and a lead actor needed each other, it was Woody Allen and Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
And it's almost hit 50 million domestic. It is far and away the biggest box office gross of Woody Allen's career.
Well, and luckily so. I think he needs a little retirement nest egg there.
And he's... I think it sold the fourth most tickets, fourth or fifth most tickets, actually, out of his 42 films.
Wow.
And, you know, he still is at the point in his career where the financiers, he tells them, okay, I'm ready to make a movie, and they have a certain number of days to get him the money. They don't get to read the script. Still, right. To this day, it's just...
It's a Woody Allen movie.
I want my name on a Woody Allen movie.
Isn't that something?
The Tree of Life, which debuted at Cannes, opened here May 27th.
Mixed reviews on that.
Not really. You keep saying that, but the reviews have been almost categorically extraordinary.
Oh, well, I've read some bad ones. Ponderous.
On Rotten Tomato, it's like 90%.
Yeah. Then I've been reading that 10%.
You know, huge standing ovation at Cannes, extended 11-minute standing ovation for Terrence Malick. It actually made me like Brad Pitt. And okay. Sean Penn, I mean, like them. Not enjoy them as actors, but like them, because they did the movie, even though the acting challenges are slim for them, but they did it because the world needs Terrence Malick movies.
Right.
So if lending their support, Brad Pitt's company actually produced it.
Oh.
It's Terrence Malick's singularly deliberate style, no doubt, does prove unrewarding for some. But for patient viewers, it is such an emotional treat, as well as the fact that it's the most visually incredible film that we're going to see this year.
Awesome.
Two more. Beginners, I talked about before, on June 3rd. This stars Ian McGregor in one of his most beautiful performances, a true, like, quiet everyman kind of performance.
Yeah.
Christopher Plummer plays his father,
right.
Who comes out of the closet after his wife's death.
Right.
And it also stars Melanie Laurent, who is so good in Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's made by artist and filmmaker Mike Mills, who did the equally touching Thumbsucker. And it's very autobiographical. And you get to see Mike Mills' own artwork.
Is that right?
Your love of art, you would love it. Comedy. It's just it's a really sweet, touching, funny character piece.
Well, I'm going then.
And finally, a documentary that opened on June 17th by first-timer Cindy Meal. Do not watch the trailer. I'm warning everyone, don't watch the trailer to this film.
Because it gives away everything?
It's called Buck, and it's about the real-life horse whisperer, Brenneman. Do not watch the trailer.
Well, now you're going to make everybody watch the trailer.
No, don't watch the trailer, because here's the thing. The movie was very good and would have moved me to tears if I hadn't seen the trailer. But, of course, they hit you with all the most emotional moments out of context in the trailer. And I think they felt they had to get you to the theater, but it undermined a little bit the emotional experience.
Damn it.
Finally, there is a film on DVD and on two-disc collector's edition DVD that is emotional, that is funny, that is thought-provoking, that is adventurous. It's groundbreaking, dare I say it, in its spherical structure. It is an epic of comedy, consciousness, and conspiracy.
Directed and edited by you.
Directed and edited by your friend in podcasting, Phil Lernes. Starring and executive produced by Mr. Dean Haglund. Produced by Lyle Scozzi. I'm talking, of course, about The Truth Is Out There.
Yes.
The Truth Is Out There is indeed out there.
Yes.
It's available on DVD, two-disc collector's edition DVD, in the U.S., the U.K., and the European Union. Now, here's the thing. We're getting orders in the U.S., getting orders in the European Union. No one from the U.K. yet. What's the deal?
Well, they saw it. So many people came to the London film.
There were a lot of our fans and likers who didn't come to that screening.
Maybe they're just warming
up. Where I have not heard any orders from them.
We'll put the pressure on that.
Not keeping their end up.
Maybe there's an economic collapse going on in London.
Where isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
The sky is falling everywhere.
As a plane goes overhead.
This is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes.
It is a cinematic jewel.
The truth is out there.
It's our love letter to truth seekers everywhere, and it is available exclusively at truth-is-out.com. Live-there.com. What if you don't live in the U.S., the U.K., or the E.U.? Well, it will be coming to Australia very soon.
Coming
to Canada before the end of the year.
We could hardly wait.
Everywhere in the world, it's available as a digital download.
Yeah.
Also through truth-is-out-there.com. And later this month, we'll also start offering the Blu-ray edition.
How about that?
Of the film. So check that out.
That's going to be exciting.
As always, you can find
every episode.
This show and so many of our old episodes, and we're going to add a whole bunch more of the old episodes
this week. We should do that this week.
At chillpackhollywood.com, chillpackhollywood.com. You can follow us on Twitter.
I'm D. Haglin.
I'm Phil Larinus.
Can't go wrong.
You can like the show.
Please like us.
Facebook.com/ ChillPackHollywood.
And email us. As always, we answer all our emails at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com.
You're off to Vegas for the big Star Trek convention.
Big Star Trek convention, doing two shows with Denise Crosby, Thursday and Friday night. You might want to check. I think it's already sold out, but there'll be DVDs of that show available. Just
you might even have The Truth Is Out There copies of that.
Copies of that for autographs at the old table that I'll have at the convention center in Rio, at the Rio Hotel.
And you're going to be on coast to coast?
Coast to coast.
Phoning it in?
Phoning it in on Sunday. And then I'll be off to my dad's birthday the week after that or so. Or 2 weeks after
We'll be here next Monday.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Poolside.
Poolside.
To enjoy the global weirding. Until then, I'm Phil Larinus.
I'm Dean Haglin. See you then.